welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today, we are in Battersea Park to link up with a gentleman who was probably best known for his work in television, from documentaries to entertainment. He's an entrepreneur and the winner of the Great British Bake Off. He's been a dominant force within the podcast space and now is cementing his own legacy within the ultra endurance space. Yes, we are talking about the impossible. And yes, we are talking about the Jordanian desert and the impossible of 30 marathons in 30 days. Spencer Matthews, welcome to the Monday Mile podcast.
Look at that intro. It's good, isn't it?
How's this for an intro? 15 years ago,
yeah.
Did you imagine your introduction within the top line would be ultra endurance? You are paving the way in this space.
No, well, I'm following in the footsteps of many awesome people before me, to be honest, and I'm inspired by loads of great people that I'm sure we'll talk about. But yeah, when I was 20 years old, what was I up to? I was working at ICAP when I was 20 as a forward foreign exchange broker. I was drinking 10 pints of Guinness a day, whiskey in the evening. I was, you know, very overweight by my standards. Yeah, just wasn't in a great place. Didn't love what I did and kind of would turn up to work pretty deflated. And, you know, the world was a much grayer place than it is now. I think very difficult to live a full, meaningful life when you have such a poor relationship with alcohol, to be honest. Running a couple of miles back then would have been a big ask.
And now, 12K. Is a small ask.
12K is a day off at the moment. You know, I don't mean to show off in terms of the training, but the training program for the current task is full. 12K would be a very, very short run with what we're doing at the moment, but it's different because it's not punishment. I love it. You know, it's kind of what, and we've geared up to be where we are now. It's kind of lame, but like the thing I look forward to most in the day outside of spending time with kids and my wife and blah, 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 is running. And I love it.
Your life has taken a drastic 360 spin. And you are living proof. Not everybody likes running to start with. You didn't have a love for it. And now you are living proof of it and just getting better and better.
I think it's the same with anything. I think when you consistently do something and you become better at it, that feeling of becoming good at something is quite a hook. You know, whether it be painting or making coffee or running or whatever it might be, you know, just like it feels nice to get better at stuff, doesn't it? So, you know, I used to run quite slowly around this park and it would really hurt my knees and I'd sweat loads and feel really quite uncomfortable and my lungs would be a bit tight for, you know, the half day that would follow. And I'd think, I'm not sure I really enjoyed that experience. You've got to push through the initial pain, I suppose, to feel any kind of reward. And I think that's pretty ordinary in most things. Same for business, same for relationships, friendships even. You know,
it's not always linear, is it?
No, it's not always straightforward.
Sometimes we step off the track. Who are we walking with today for those that are primarily listening to the audio?
This is Bertie and that's Winston. Winston is a kind of old thing. He comes from Vogue's
Amazing podcast I'm listening to.
Oh, thank you very much.
Not the Spencer and Vogue one.
No, Big Fish. Thank you so much.
Love that. Love that for you. So we've been going about 3 minutes. Yeah. We are in your local park, but so far we've been stopped twice. We were stopped initially by a lady congratulating you on your running success to date, and it actually hasn't begun as yet. First of all, Spencer, tell us about the challenge you are about to embark on.
So we've got 30 marathons in 30 days in the desert coming up, which is, it's roughly 5 times the distance of the Marathon des Sables in pretty similar conditions. It couldn't be hotter, by the way, when we're going out there. Logistically, it's the only time of the year that made sense. We would have had to have kicked it into like December if we couldn't get it done in this period. And to be honest, I'm so impatient. When I get something in my head and I want to do it, I simply can't wait a year. I need to just get out and do it. It's going to be awesome. If we pull it off, it'll be a world first. We're doing it. Well, there's 2 reasons. There's personal reasons for doing it, and then there's charity reasons for doing it. I'm working with Global's Make Some Noise, which is an incredible honour. I think the work that they do is amazing. We'll go into more detail on some of the charities in a sec, but they focus mostly around kids with mental and physical health issues, child bereavement, loneliness, homelessness, and a lot of causes that are quite close to my heart. So delighted to be fundraising for them. Love everyone listening to this to check it out, you know, makesomenoise.com, and have a little read about how you can be involved. From a personal level, I really want to see just how far my body and mind can go. I was looking for a new challenge. So I did the Amazon Ultra, the Marathon de Sable, and, you know, other bits and bobs. And I was looking for more. And then I just thought, let's just do something wild.
This really is kicking it off the Richter scale of wild. You know, most people do a marathon, or some people endure a marathon. It's not for everyone. But this is 30 marathons in 30 days on sand. My first question is, where's the sand in Battersea Park, and have you done any running on sand?
Everyone's fascinated by this sand thing.
Because, like, it hurts!
Yeah, no, I don't mean to make it sound easier than it will be, of course, because it's going to be hard. But this isn't like, you know, when you go to the beach, as an example, and you, yeah, and you run the beach, and your calves and your legs are battered because the sand's really soft. The sand will be a little bit harder than that, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be somewhere in between the beach and a trail run.
Okay.
But it's not going to be like a beach.
But okay, in the blistering sunshine with no shade.
Yeah, it'll be similar conditions to the Marathon de Sable. You know, when I did that, the temperatures were in the high 40s because it was October. It's the only Marathon de Sable that's ever taken place in October. It unfortunately killed somebody. It was a kind of more barbaric version of the Marathon de Sable because COVID delayed it by several years, and there was a big build-up. And the gentleman in charge decided to do the race in October for the first and only time. And it was significantly hotter than it would be ordinarily in March, I think it is, or April, whenever the normal race is. So it was more difficult conditions. But it's that race that's led me to want to do this because of the similarity. And I was going through, like, a bit of personal stuff at the time when I decided to do the Marathon de Sable. It was quite early into my sobriety. And it was an incredible thing to do. And actually, if you are a runner and you've done a marathon, or even if you haven't, look at it as something to consider, because it's not a fast race. You don't hammer this race. It's quite a slow race. I mean, not for everyone. Obviously, some people run the whole thing, but I didn't run the whole thing. I ran most of it, but, you know, marched bits of it. And, you know, it's a really good opportunity to think and be alone at times in the desert, in the Sahara. It's cool. I loved it. It's a real adventure.
Not the kind of place you just go to. So it gives you a reason.
It's a serious adventure. And it's cool, like, get a group of friends together and go and all do it. And you might not all make it to the, not, you won't die, hopefully, but you might not all finish the race, but you'll definitely gain something from the experience of going there. I'd be very surprised if you didn't love it. I had this conversation with someone on holiday in the Maldives. We've only ever been to the Maldives once. We took all the kids and mum and dad and Vogue, and it was amazing. And I met this awesome guy who's never run a marathon, and I was telling him about this. And he messaged me yesterday, and he was like, "Hey, dude, I'm doing Marathon de Sable."
No,
and I was
way.
Like, "That's amazing! Like, you're gonna have the best time, and it will be hard, and it'll be rough, and you'll feel like giving up at times. But it's these moments in life that test you that are awesome. You're so alive in those moments, and there's nothing that I hate more than extreme levels of comfort, kind of, unless you're on a week-long holiday with your family, in which case that's fine. But, like, I get very bored when I'm comfortable."
Is it an addiction?
I think so, yeah. I think so. Running is certainly an addiction now. It wasn't, though. Chris occasionally writes a day off into my running plan at the moment, and I'm itching to get running on the days off.
One day.
I don't like the days where I don't run. The running, it's such a, I don't really know how to describe it, because so many people do a better job of describing it than I do, but it's a real release, real escape. I find myself now, even if I find an hour in the day, I just lace up and get out and go running, and it's like, it's great way of getting your fresh air and steps in. And
how do you fit all of the training in going into your current challenge, juggling life with a family, Vogue? What does she think of it all?
She thinks it's mad. She thinks it's dangerous, and she thinks it's mad. I've spent a while kind of sitting with her and explaining to her the reasons that I feel comfortable taking on the challenge. She's not a runner in the way that I run, and I think she sees the whole thing as just being a bit dangerous. There was a time at the beginning where it created a little bit of friction in the house because She didn't really understand why I would want to put myself in this, you know, potentially deadly scenario. And just before we, you know, make it all peaches and cream, it is a deadly scenario, although I will be very well supported. If you take races like the Marathon des Sables and the Amazon Jungle Ultra, you know, both of which I did pretty well in, you are unsupported. So you're carrying all of your food, you're carrying all of your kit that you sleep in, you're carrying any changes of clothes that you may wish to carry, although you know, most who are serious about the race wouldn't bother carrying a change of clothes because it's just additional weight. And essentially, if you get into serious trouble on that, there's the potential of quite serious risk, because if you're in the middle of the Amazon, you know, you feel your heart going a bit funky, you keel over for a bit, there could be nobody to help you for a while, depending on where you are in the race.
So you can end up completely isolated.
You're isolated 100% in all of these races. This one in particular, I'll probably feel the less isolated out of any of them, because we have a support team.
Yeah.
So we have water and food on tap, and, you know, a physio and a doctor and Chris, my running coach, and cars following me. I feel pretty golden, you know, in this. If I feel, you know, were I to collapse, there's someone there straight away.
You've got the best people around.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas,
do you think Vogue is concerned? You know, you've got a beautiful family and you are putting yourself into a dangerous scenario. You mentioned the Marathon des Sables and one person passing away.
Yeah.
Does death scare you?
Not really. I'd be more conscious of it now that I have kids. I don't live life fearing death, if I'm honest. My views of what might happen after death, and they're just my own views, and I'm not frightened. I don't think of dying. But no, it's not something I worry about at all.
Well, that's good. We can move that to the side then.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're feeling confident going into it, because
I just feel I'm surrounded by really good professionals this time around. And you know, you'd be more concerned, I think, doing the Marathon des Sables, pushing yourself to an extreme. Whereas, you know, I didn't turn up to the Marathon des Sables to come top 50 or top 100 or anything. Just finishing the thing was a complete delight, you know, to be honest. So you're not hammering it as far as your body will go, you know, and giving yourself the chance of failure in that way. Running a sub 3-hour marathon would be considerably harder on your body, I think, than the way I ran the Marathon des Sables, which was quite conservative.
And what's the plans going into this then? Because I can imagine the training is incredibly intense to be able to manage and balance your body going into it in one piece, because you've got to put a serious amount of training in.
Yeah, I think the miles kind of get easier as you do more of them, I think. Not like in a specific run itself, but in a training block. So kind of I'm much fitter now, obviously, than I was when we started this training block. We've got about 2,000 kilometers to cover in the training block before the race. We're about halfway through that. And obviously the kilometers click up easier now than they did before, because I'm fitter and in better shape. And you know, it's almost like the niggles that I would have when I first started the training block would require constant attention in physio. I don't really have any more. Like, I don't have knee pain or anything. So you're just getting better.
Fitter and stronger.
Yeah, you're fitter, you're stronger. Your body, like, I did a post the other day about a body transformation, you know, me a few years ago and me now. If you haven't seen the post, you can probably imagine, you know, on the left you look like a beaten up, you know, ham that's been overcooked in co-op, and on the right you look quite good, you know. And it's kind of like, I think I started the post with, you know, if you want to change your body, if you want your body to get stronger, making it do uncomfortable things regularly will force it to adapt. You know, like if you go and lift heavy weights all the time, your body is going to gear itself towards having to behave in that way. If you sit on a couch all day, every day, it doesn't need to be muscular or fit, you know, for you to continue living. So it won't adapt. So my body's pretty adapted to running at the moment. So I kind of feel great about the whole thing. It doesn't mean it won't come with complications. Obviously, there's sand over there, so I'll get loads of blisters. We'll have to, you know, be across all of that. I'm hoping just not to get seriously injured, to be honest, because the sheer distance will throw up issues, you know, with your body.
Do you have any particular weaknesses currently? Any weak points that you're concerned about? Because for me, when I've done marathons, it's always the calves.
Yeah.
The calves stop blowing up. The little calves that have been in snowboard boots for 13 years.
Oh, by the way, I think your snowboarding thing is so cool. And I'd love to interview you and chat to you about
I've actually got a marathon for you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Great.
You heard about the marathon in North Korea?
No.
That was my first marathon.
Fab.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's you did 3:40 something, did you not?
No, that was the London Marathon.
Oh, cool. Okay.
A few weeks
what,
ago.
What is the North Korea? Is it relatively flat or is it?
It's flat and there's minimal support and there's definitely nobody giving out water or bananas.
Yeah.
There's no freebies on that course or crowd. Yeah. Just at the start, there was about 70,000 people in the stadium clapping in sync,
and that's it, and
to a tune, and then you're out there and you're off and it's an out and back.
Wow.
So you'd like it for the Strava.
Yeah,
but yeah, no Strava there. No phone.
God, I'm
I had like a burner phone.
I'm addicted to Strava, that's for sure. Yeah, one thing I keep hearing is like, oh well, you've just taken, you know, your addiction for booze and just replaced it with an addiction for this, and it's like, well, but yeah, that's called progress.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that a bad thing?
I don't think it's a bad thing. If you are an addict, you will never lose that, you know, addictive nature. I will always be hooked on things. Like, I'm addicted to my wife, as an example. I'm addicted to coffee.
Isn't that an incredible thing to be addicted to, though? Your wife must be chuffed.
No, I would certainly hope so. You know? I remind her that she should be chuffed, you know, with the level of attention that she gets.
We'll clip up this bit here and just put it as a reminder.
Yeah. No, but I think, I'm addicted to my wife. I'm addicted to coffee. I'm addicted to my kids. I'm addicted to exercising. If you dump me on a desert island for a week with no gym, I would find a way to lift stuff and be mobile because I find it very detrimental if I don't. Nothing to do with physicality or anything. It's more of a mental thing.
The mind. I am
I can't
exactly
not lift weights.
Same.
Like I was told when I first started this, oh, by the way, these three weight sessions that you're doing, the heavy weights, like a week is going to have to kind of taper off, you know, in the lead. Yeah. I was just like, why? Like, no.
No,
yeah, I need to lift weights. Like, I love lifting weights.
So that's like being implemented within your program so you can get your fix. But also it's needed for running, right?
Yeah.
Without the strength, the body falls apart.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of vein upper body pumps that I do with my mate in the gym are probably unnecessary for the run, but I like them. So we keep on going.
Is that what you did this morning before your... eggs and avocado on toast.
Yeah, so this morning was, chest and upper body, completely pointless for running, but yeah, just.
But if it makes you feel good and it gives you that elation and high, then it needs to be done. In a time where mental health is more spoken about than ever, purpose and serving your inner desire to get that high is so important.
Well, I just think I interviewed a neuroscientist the other day. And we spoke a lot about dopamine and serotonin and adrenaline and, you know, stuff that literally, you know, gets you going. And, you know, I'm an Andrew Huberman fan and I listen to him when I go running. And I'm your stereotypical 35-year-old who's suddenly become incredibly interested in, like, how you can be the most optimal version of yourself health-wise. And that includes balance, by the way. So I spoke about being teetotal earlier. I'm not teetotal, I drink alcohol, but my relationship with alcohol is just completely different. Like, life is not a linear thing, as we briefly touched on as well. People's feelings and emotions around certain things become different. Habits change. I no longer look at drinking as something that excites me. If anything, I know it's a huge hindrance to me.
Does it make you want to turn the other way?
I think that people who abuse alcohol, as I did, you've got choices to make, right? If it's getting in the way of your life in a really meaningful way, and it's beginning to affect other people in particular, or perhaps, you know, getting in the way of you being a good parent, then in my opinion, action has to be taken, right?
Yeah.
You can't continue to be that version of yourself. Well, I couldn't continue to be that version of myself. I did 3.5 years of total abstinence in which, you know, I was able to really reframe my relationship with alcohol. That doesn't mean to say that if I'm at Dorian in Notting Hill, which is the best restaurant ever, and I'm there with my parents and wife and there's a lovely bottle of red wine going around, I won't have a glass. It's like, I'm not going to have 5 glasses and I'm not going to go home and stay up all night. I feel like I have a different relationship with it. So it's kind of like, as soon as it starts to feel like a problem,
that's,
I think it needs
attention,
consideration, you know, whereas like it hasn't felt like a problem for me for a really long time.
I think that's a really special place to be and something to celebrate.
Yeah.
I see when people go teetotal, it's closing off the doors because you have no ability, in essence, to
control that
balance. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn. I totally respect some people don't want to have it in their life, but if you can find a place where you can do both,
Yeah.
Dr. Anna Lemke is a psychotherapist who specializes in addiction. She's written an incredible book called Dopamine Nation that I would urge you to read. It's like, it's one of those things you simply can't put down. I've read it twice. It's literally just like, it's a, I read it in 2 days type thing on holiday. You just nuke it because it's so interesting. She says that, you know, dopamine is something that we all have, and there are releases of dopamine all the time. Having a cold shower will release dopamine. Having a coffee will release dopamine. Having a drink or a cigarette or sex will release dopamine. But it's a kind of pleasure-pain balance in her eyes. So like, if her clinical view is that if you give yourself all this pleasure, it will, your body will naturally balance it out with pain, right? In the form of, you know, mental health issues, or, you know, depression, anxiety. Yeah. You know, you cannot continuously enjoy pleasure in your body in a bio, you know, chemical sense without it leveling itself out. And often it will dip below the norm, right? So it's kind of drinking heavily, feeling shit, you know, it's leveling out your dopamine
but
levels.
In the same instance with running, achieving great success and having the high and the endorphins versus 3 days later, the big question of what's next? Because you feel a bit shit because you've lost that purpose.
She says that in order to have any kind of control or understanding of addictive things or stuff that you fall into bad habits with, you must endure a period of total abstinence. So like this kind of, oh, I'm a really big problem drinker, but you know, now I'm only going to drink on Fridays, will never work for anyone. So she's like, you must give yourself and your brain chemistry the chance to live completely free of it, in order to kind of grow and evolve with your feelings and understandings of it, right? So I read this book, you know, long after I'd started kind of drinking again. But yeah, the drinking is just super rare. It's like, it's every few weeks, you know, I might have a couple of drinks or something. And then you kind of feel a little bit like, you know, was
it's
that
a bit,
really necessary?
A bit sluggish.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's just a different thing. Like I used to wake up after a huge night and think, okay, like, when is it socially acceptable to drink again? Or like, when is the pub going to be open? So I can like get that first couple of pints into me quickly and then go about my day. Like it was bad for a long time.
That is wild.
Yeah. It's Friday, the sun's out. I have like less than no interest in going to the pub and having a drink. But having said that, you know, if you find yourself in the right place at the right time, whatever, have a drink.
Yeah,
you know, I just think having all these rules in place as well in your mind is a really tough thing to abide by. Like the more you tell yourself you can and can't do this and that, the more you feel like a little kid, you know, and it's kind of...
So have you stripped away boundaries in a multitude of areas of your life?
I have obvious boundaries that any morally correct, hardworking human would also have, you know, just normal societal boundaries, I think. But no, like I don't say to myself, like, only eat donuts on a Saturday, you know, I'll eat whatever I want, whenever I want. If I feel like a drink, I'll have a drink. It's just, you know, I feel like I live a really good life with great balance, which I suppose isn't that big a deal because it's probably what most people have anyway, you know, just coming from a position that I was in before, it feels, well, just great to feel that level of control with your life.
Having been there and experienced that extreme, does it scare you that you could go too far in the other direction? Because what you're about to endure is savage.
I'll find it really cathartic. I think Alex Hormozi said it quite well, and I don't really remember exactly what he said. But he said something like, you know, when he pushes himself to extremes, it's gone from a feeling of like, oh, I can't believe I have to do this, to a feeling of, I want to do this, I can't believe you're gonna have to follow me, type thing. And it's like, it's a slightly arrogant way of putting it, I suppose, but it is interesting. Like, no part of me is fearing what's coming up. Like, I'm looking forward to it. If I could go tomorrow, I would, right? And it's like, I think the whole thing is really exciting. We're off to these canyons in the desert that are dark red in nature. It's where they filmed The Martian in the Wadi Rum desert. We're sleeping under the stars every night. It's gonna be cool. It's gonna be awesome. It's gonna be a super adventure that, you know, if successful, could be quite life-changing. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm not gonna try and break myself running these marathons. I'm gonna run all the marathons, but I'm gonna do it in a way that I'm comfortable with because there's 30 of them. I'm gonna eat loads of lovely grub and it's gonna be great, you know?
Sounds amazing. Like, are you guys going to have like a barbecue out there cooking
so.
Up the meats?
I think so.
Yeah, that's going to be a vibe.
Yeah, we'll have a great guy there. You know, we'll play some nice loud music in the desert. We're not disturbing anyone. You know, I'm going to try and make it as fun as possible. Yeah. So, you know, that's one thing the Marathon de Sable lacks. You know, you finish your day and then you're just alone with your thoughts and everyone complaining about their feet and, you know, everyone feeling battered and you're kind of like, it can be quite a negative thing. This will, all being well, you know, we're going to try and take you along for the journey. We're going to be releasing content on a daily basis and all being well, it will be really uplifting, great content. You know, I want people to want to be there.
I want to be there. You sold it to me.
There you go. It'll be cool, though.
I'm there. 26.2 miles in the desert on sand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give it a go.
No,
it's incredible to see your excitement. Like, you are absolutely... just, you can feel this like infectious energy of just lust for life, actually.
Yeah, but I love it though. Any of these extreme challenges, I look at them, I'm kind of drooling over them. I'm not like, I don't see them as this thing that should be feared or that you're gonna have to spend so long kind of training for and it's all dark and gloomy. It's like, they excite me. And how far the human body can go really excites me as well. You know, I'm actually, strangely enough, I'm not a huge David Goggins fan. Some of the things that he's done is so amazing. Like, I saw this clip this morning actually, and he messaged Joe Rogan basically saying that yesterday, for the fun of it in the gym, he did the equivalent of climbing Mount Everest on the Stairmaster. So he just got on the Stairmaster and did.
How long did that take?
Well, it took him 6.5 hours, I think he said. I think David Goggins got a screw loose basically, but that's fine because it's very full on, all the stuff that he does. And he wasn't a runner at the time, and he ran across America like long before anyone else really was doing that kind of thing. And he did the entire width of America in 56 days or 63 days or something like that, you know, coming from never running before. Like, he's an animal, you know, which is great. I think the way that he urges people just to get off their ass is probably a bit aggressive, but he's awesome, you know, the things that he can push himself to. And I suppose I'm curious about similar stuff.
There's a huge element of, if I can, I will. Is there a particular moment where you felt that itch and you went, you know what, I'm going to run an extra 5 miles or an extra 10 miles, because it's not something you're instinctively born with. It's a process of having the time in a moment to make a decision to go that extra bit further.
This is going to sound like weird and a bit sadistic or whatever, but I actively punished myself the other day for whinging to myself when I was running. So basically, like, I set out to do like a quite fast 10K at the time. I think I was running 4:51 average split per kilometer. So not fast. It was fast for me at the time, right?
Yeah.
Like, anything sub 5 at the time was quite fast for me.
Punchy.
whereas now I'm a lot faster than that. But like, then it was kind of, I hadn't learned to stride yet. Do you know what a stride is? You must do, yeah, obviously. When you like, you're running, Chris Taylor taught me this thing the other day. It's completely changed everything about my running. It's called striding. And if you're a runner and you don't know what a stride is,
I've gone silent, if you noticed.
Mate, strides like will just blast time like in your race. It's amazing. So striding is when, for many years when I was running, I would focus on what's in front of me, right? And like lunge, propel. Basically, yeah. Striding is the opposite. So all of them big runners. You know when you see somebody running incredibly fast?
Like Mo Farah.
Yeah, Mo Farah, Kipchoge. You notice they run and they look effortless and kind of incredible. And you wonder why you look nothing like that when you run. Yeah, yeah.
You
not
see,
you, I'm talking
you
about
see,
everyone.
No, you see your videos and photos after the marathon.
Yeah, yeah, like... no, yeah. So striding is when you make a particular effort to kind of kick yourself in the ass.
Oh, I do that.
Right? So you kick yourself in the ass and you lean forward almost uncomfortably. So you and your legs naturally shoot forwards because otherwise you'd fall over, right? So it's kind of, you give it this. And you honestly feel like propelled forward. And anyway, so this is pre-striding and all that stuff. And I did 10K, the last like 2K of that 10K, I was literally like, oh, I'm not sure I'm gonna get to the end of this. I can't, like, I don't wanna push it. I'll just do nine. And I got to nine and I was like, oh, God, I can't just do nine. I'll do 10.
Yeah.
And like I was pushing the kind of last bit. And then towards when I had like 100 meters left, I was like, actually, I'm gonna do another 10 because like I was whinging there to myself.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. So I carried on and kept the pace for another 10.
Wow.
As punishment, basically, for nearly bailing on the first 10. But this is where I'll start to sound mental and stuff. But in my own head,
No.
I was like,
I think it's interesting.
If you get used to saying, oh, well, I was gonna run 10 at this pace and I've done 8 and that's enough, that is a really shit thought and I shouldn't be thinking that way. So I punished myself with another 10 and I ran the whole 20 at that tempo, which at the time, like, I got back and I was like battered. I could barely walk basically.
Wow.
But it was like, it's not like that fast. Anyone who runs a lot, that's not a particularly fast pace. Just at the time, it was very fast for me.
Those moments where you are thinking about 30. Complaining or whinging or not really up for it, say, what do you think of? Because I've got a particular process that I adopt and did adopt when I did my first marathon in North Korea. So I'm just wondering, when you take it to the extreme, Does it change?
I think my kids come into my mind. I called my coach, Chris, and I told him this feeling that I had. I was running in this park just over there. Sorry if this is like technical run chat to people, but this is a running podcast, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a walking podcast about mindset and resilience.
Okay, good.
So we are in the resilience part of the Monday Mile.
Okay, good.
Let's keep being resilient.
Yeah. So I had some tempo runs to do the other day, which is kind of a normal run, and somewhere in the run you do much faster kilometers, and these were sub-4 minute kilometers, so these were run at like 3:50, which is pretty fast. Like you're flying at that, you know, that's far quicker than a sub-3 marathon, but obviously you're not doing it for 40k, you're just doing 5k in single k increments, but you're flying, like, and you know, the last 400 meters is really tough for me at this pace, you know, but you do feel like you're flying. And on the last one, I'd done them all sub-4 and I had one to go and I just couldn't do it. And I was like, I was at 3:50 to begin with, and then I started like gassing and slowing down, and I looked at my watch and it's going like 4:05, 4:06, 4:07, like the pace.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I had 500 meters left to go, and I was like, I just can't get it back under 4. And I started having these like big, like, oh, that's really annoying because all of the others are sub-4 and I really don't want it to bring my average up. And I just had this like crazy vision out of nowhere of Theodore, my son, being stood on the side of the thing going, go on, Dad! And I was like, oh my God. I just got this huge surge and just hammered the rest of it. And brought it back down to 3:50. And I was just like, that was an amazing feeling of thinking about him wanting it for me, type of thing. Like, just, you know, your kids screaming for you or your wife screaming for you. I don't know. It's all in your head though, really, isn't it? Like all of these feelings of wanting to give up, like you can always push through them. It's just a case of actually doing it.
And finding it, I think. Mm. And it varies day to day. I have one or two things that I latch onto. The first one is so simplistic, but I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to run, because not everybody can run. And it's the most beautiful free gift that we have been given. And coming from a extreme sport and having put my body in situations of extreme danger, to still have the ability to move freely is my motivation. Yeah. I think it's just something that everyone can connect to should they have the ability to run. And then the second one is mind mapping. So when I'm in a deep, dark place in a run, or in my first marathon, my experience was my knee hurt, my foot hurt, everything hurts. The wheels are coming off. And there's these negative emotions essentially just passing through my brain, and I imagined it like literally almost like a conveyor belt. With every 2 or 3 negatives, there was a positive, and I'd take the positive and literally stick it like a sticky note visually front and center of my brain, and then just focus on the positive, the reasons why you're doing it, the feeling afterwards, or whatever it may be for you. That's your intrinsic motivation, because motivation comes in so many different forms, and I really don't believe there is a wrong or right type of motivation. As long as it matters to you.
Yeah, it's that motivation versus discipline thing as well. If you're disciplined and you go running on the days where you don't feel like running, on the days where you do feel like running, your run will be better and easier. Yeah. You know, and it's kind of like, I think anyone can be motivated, right? It's not that complicated to wake up and go, right, I want to go and do something, or I want to be this guy or this woman. Days that you feel motivated are great. But it's the days where you don't feel motivated that, you know, require discipline. The ice bath is a perfect example. my beloved ice bath. It's like, it's quite rare that you actually feel like getting in that thing at 6:30, right? You know, or whenever it might be. And it's just over there, by the way, so we can go and have one if you want afterwards. But it's like, it's 0.3 degrees. It's got big thick sheets of ice in it. You always feel incredible for having done it. Always, like it's the most amazing feeling. But like when you first wake up and you take the lid off it and it's cold outside and it's kind of dark and you just go, like, this is gonna be, you know.
I've never understood the ice bath thing.
It's so good.
Do you do it first thing always?
Not always first thing.
Yeah,
but like I do find that if you can do it first thing, that's probably, you have a better morning for it. Excellent for your metabolism. It releases a ton of dopamine without the cortisol. So sorry for the, for those of you that are less interested in neuroscience, basically, ordinarily, if you have a big dopamine release from something like a drink or a cigarette or something that is toxic, it will also release cortisol, which is the drug, I suppose, in your mind that is most linked to stress. So there's that imbalance of pleasure and stress. Whereas a controlled cold plunge releases no cortisol. So you just get a huge dopamine release.
Vogue must just think you've taken everything to an extreme, though, because the person that she met.
Yeah, I think she prefers this person just in passing.
Yeah, but I would imagine so.
Yeah, yeah.
It's such a revelation in terms of a turnaround. What would you say to someone that is considering getting into running and taking a step away from alcohol?
I think alcohol is a big grey cloud over anyone that drinks it, to be honest. And I'm not here to say that you should or shouldn't be drinking alcohol, but I'm obviously not the only person that says that if you do cut back on alcohol or don't drink at all, your life will get better. That's a certainty, right? There's no benefits at all to drinking alcohol. Having balance, honestly, for me, is better than being teetotal. I don't like that lingering feeling of, well, you can't have that, right? I like to think I can have whatever I want. And that feeling of, you know, if you go to AA or whatever, it's like, you are powerless over this situation. Again, I like to feel powerful over my life. You know, yeah. I don't like thinking even that I don't have power over my own life or behavior, because I think it is a choice at the end of the day. And I'm not talking about people that have, you know, very serious illnesses with alcohol dependency. I'm just talking about, you know, a kid that drank too much for a long time, you know,
yeah.
Talking about myself here and my own life experience. You know, whenever I say anything about this, everyone goes, well, actually, you know, alcohol dependency is a very serious disease. It's like, yeah, I'm not talking about that. I abused alcohol for a huge period of my life, and actually it was a choice to do that. Being in control of that situation and no longer abusing it is also a choice. So, you know, I feel very happy about that.
That's such an incredible place to be.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know, look, if you feel like you have an issue with drink, then you probably do. Most people that don't have problems with alcohol don't think they have a problem with alcohol. Mm-hmm. So if in your head you're going like, I wake up hungover one too many times, you know, and like that night, the other night, that I can't really remember, that's a bit worrying to me. And I'm not the guy to deliver like the hard facts, but if you're waking up and you don't remember bits of your night, it's quite a big problem in a neurochemical sense. I don't mean to only talk about neuroscience, I'm just really interested in it, have been for a while. If you ever have blacked out or you're blacking out, that is not good for your brain. Not to state the obvious, but,
yeah.
But it's really bad for your brain anyway. So like, I think drinking booze in general, if you're able to have the odd glass of wine here and there with a nice meal, great. If you feel like you're abusing it, I think absolutely just try, you know, a period of abstinence. Over 6 million people did Dry January this year in this country, you know, which I think is a really incredible number. You know, I don't have the data to support what I'm about to say, but I would have thought 100% of those people loved it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of like, or, you know, call it 90%. It's a very difficult thing not to enjoy, to be honest. You have considerably more time in your day. Your mind is never cloudy. You feel more driven, you know, you're more inclined to work out, get fresh air. You are going to be better as a result of drinking less.
And to those people that maybe haven't run or wouldn't even consider running, tell me about your first marathon and at the point in which it switched and became a little bit easier and a lot more exciting. Because there's
again,
definitely a bug there. And
again, it's
like the most on-trend thing is running marathons currently.
People love it, don't they?
Yeah.
So
it's pretty cool.
The London Marathon had 250,000 additional applicants this year than it did last year, which is a huge number of people. And also I was there, I was at mile 22 supporting people, and it was kind of like the general vibe of the thing is insane, right? There's just like thousands of people lining the streets, screaming for people, and it's so cool. I'm gonna run it next year, I think. I've never even thought to run London because it's like,
have you not done London?
No, I've done New York three times and Berlin a couple of times. I haven't ran London because I live here and I've always thought, well, I know the route and it's like gonna be, I quite like not knowing where I'm going. But then again, I was never a crazy runner when I was making those decisions. Like now it feels definitely right to try and run a really fast London, maybe try and go sub three. That would be a really cool thing for me to target, which I think I will go for next year.
Boom, you've heard it here.
Yeah.
The exclusive sub three.
Yep, oh yeah. My brother has done 3:03.
No
which I can only imagine was the most annoying thing. That's just like, yeah, I called him the other day and I was like, did you? Because he's a big runner. Was a big runner anyway. I think he's done 20 marathons and he did Marathon de Sable and, you know, bits and pieces. I called him the other day and I said, have you gone sub three? And he was like,
oh no.
Done 3:03 and 3:04 and, you know, bits and bobs. And I was like,
perfect.
Yeah. Ideal.
Ideal.
Grand.
That's exactly the information I needed to just put it in the pocket.
A friend of mine the other day did 3 hours and like 10 seconds or something. And I was like, that's as good as. And she was like, no, it's not. Like, that's not. And I was like, come on.
She didn't have her boy cheering her on the finish line.
No. Yeah, she didn't have her imaginary child yelling at her.
Just placing them there.
Yeah.
Do you believe that you were born to be an athlete?
Oh, God, no. No, not at all. No, I always really deeply admired athletes. Always. Like, I've always looked at athletes as the kind of pinnacle of almost popularity. Like, back when I was at school, I wasn't the world's most popular kid. I had a bit of a rough start to my schooling here. I arrived late in the year from a school in the Caribbean. I spoke French mostly there. Never been in the English school system. I'm not whinging, by the way, but just like, I just didn't have a very good time at school. Like, I didn't feel very popular. Kind of, you know, I was the butt of a few jokes. And I just like, there wasn't much sport at that school. Then I kind of miraculously got into Eton somehow, right, past my common entrance. Got into Eton, completely different deal. Sports just everywhere, like every sport you could possibly imagine. Just completely filled my boots with sport, right? I loved it so much. I'd never played sport in an organized way before the age of 13, basically. Never played football with a group of people, never played rugby with a team, never played hockey. Like, this was all firsts for me. Started off, I was a substitute prop for the E's. So that's A's, B's, C's, D's, E's.
No!
For the fifth team.
No! And so, I thought it was bad being on the C's hockey team.
So I was substitute prop for the E's in my first year, open side flanker for the A's in my following year, right? I just dropped a load of weight. Learned how to play sport, like became kind of really into sport. But the most popular kids were always like the sporting heroes. And, you know, we'd obviously, it was around that time England won the World Cup. And like, you know, it was, sport was, obviously always has been huge, but it became really relevant to me when I was, you know, a teenager. So not a kid, right? No, I've always looked at people who do incredible things and go, wow, like that's amazing. I used to see them in a separate category to me.
Now bear with me.
Right.
You spoke about sporting heroes being at a pinnacle. You are entering your prime and at a pinnacle of your own personal athletic career. We spoke about the London Marathon. This London Marathon, we saw some incredible feats.
Yeah.
We saw a lady qualify for her first Olympics.
Yeah.
We saw a recreational runner becoming an elite runner.
Cummings.
In the elite field. Would you dare to dream to put yourself in a position of that pinnacle moving forward?
It's such a hard question to answer because it just feels so far away from, these are such new thoughts. But watching her story, Cummings, did make me think about this kind of stuff, Because I was thinking, if she went from running a 4-hour 34 marathon when, by all accounts, she wasn't really a runner, to being picked to run with the elites this year and running 2:40 something, and she's run 2:33, I think, as her PB. That is just like, if she can do it, I feel like I can do it. And if, like, I've always looked at people, and this is going to sound arrogant again, but I'm just I'm just trying to be honest with you.
It's not arrogant. It's actually positive mental manifestation.
If I look at somebody who's achieved something, my natural inclination has always in the back of my mind to think, well, I can do that as well. It's just whether or not you want to do it. It's a strange line, though, to be drawn, isn't it? Because, like, you know, can you break a sub-2 marathon? Of course not, obviously, right? Like, that's like a world record thing in a field in which, you know, these runners have been doing it their entire life. So that's kind of off the cards. But could you do sub-3? Yeah, definitely. Could you work towards being invited to run with the elites? Maybe. I don't know. Like, it's exciting, isn't it?
I wonder if you're tall enough.
I don't know.
Because they're quite...
Are they tall?
They're really tall.
I'm very tall, though.
I reckon
you... I'm very tall.
Are you? I've got my high-heeled Converse on today.
Yeah. No, I'm not that tall.
No. I think you might have to drop the weight beach muscle session in the gym.
No, there'd be no bench pressing of any kind.
Yeah, you need to like strip that muscle and go lean up top, right, if you're going for speed.
That would be a kind of life-changing decision. And also, you know, I'd have to weigh up the benefit of becoming such a serious runner, I suppose, because, well, it would be very different to what I'm doing now, right? But like, let's set the sights on sub-3.
Okay.
I'm keen to give sub-3 a go before the end of this year.
We can reconvene next year after the London Marathon. And see how far we are off the elite category. Maybe I'll consider it too.
Why not? I think, listen, like, I think she is a real eye-opener for normal people.
Yeah.
Right? Like I'm on all counts not a professional athlete. I'm nowhere near the realms of professional athleticism. But neither was she, like, in any sense, right? She was miles away from it, like literally. And for those of you that are unfamiliar with the story, this young lady who's incredible ran her first marathon in like 4:35 or something like that, you know, give or take a couple of minutes. Again, if you're a marathon runner, you know, you might not be overly impressed with that time. It's, you know, it's quite slow, to be honest. And then it's kind of, and then she goes away, falls out of love with running. COVID hits. She uses COVID as a chance to just go out and run. Falls in love with running, gets the bug, and runs like a 3-something and then ultimately a 2:40-something. It's just like, it's crazy.
It's mind-blowing.
She shaved 2 hours off her first marathon time in like 3 years. 2 hours is a long time, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely nuts.
Yeah, so...
That's a lot of time on your feet. Imagine just going for a 2-hour run. I mean, you're doing that frequently, but to anybody who doesn't run,
running for two hours
is a long time.
It kind of gets you thinking, though, that... You know, if you set your mind to it and you want to be an incredible runner, you know,
anything's possible.
Yeah, anything's possible. I think it's amazing. I've had the good fortune of meeting her a couple of times, but I just thought it's really insane that she's just turned her life into something that's going to inspire so many people to lace up their running shoes. And so I think about her when I'm running sometimes. When I'm running, I just think, like, because the other day I held a sub-3-hour marathon pace for 10K. And it's the first time I've ever done that. And truth be told, it felt comfortable enough. And I was like, okay, well, it's 4 of these. You know, I think I could probably do 2, like now, but I'd need to work to build it into a marathon thing. So like sub-3 hours in my optimistic mind already feels quite achievable. And then like my mind was like, well, what does 2:30 look like? You know, and it's kind of like, but it's funny because the progress since February has been immense, right? In February I was like pretty slow. Now I'd say I'm quite a good runner.
Where does the optimism come from? Because you are incredibly positive. I love it.
Yeah. I suppose I'm not afraid to fail.
Okay. That's a strong start because a lot of people will never start through fear of failure.
I'd much rather be optimistic about a result and then not achieve the result and learn from the failure than to overthink it and not try.
And how do you feel about that publicly, like with your friends, in the media? Does it scare you to fail when it comes to looking ahead to this challenge?
It depends. Oh, this challenge. Yeah. Yeah, I'm petrified of failing it. But that's because there's a big charitable element to it. If it was just me going out to do it on my own, then I wouldn't mind so much. But we're raising some pretty significant funds for children mostly that really need it. It would be disappointing not to be able to deliver that in as full a way as possible. There will come a time at the end of marathon 15 where I go, got 15 of these fucking things left, you know, like, and it's going to be awful. Awful. It will feel shit.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard.
Yeah.
How do you think you'll approach that?
Oh, I really don't know. I think when you're in, and you're just going to have to head down and crack on. And I'm going to feel a huge amount of regret during it, you know, and it's going to be quite shit at times. And I'm going to think, had I said I was going to do 10, it would have had the same impact, really. But I've said 30, so now I have to do 30. and it's going to be annoying, right? But I think if it were me, and I was talking to Sean, who you mentioned earlier, my PT close friend who I do Big Fish Extra Catch with, we were talking about doing some kind of fundraising dinner and inviting a bunch of people and like auctioning off some prizes and bits and bobs. And he was like, you know, we can work on that together and get it done. And I was like, I think we should do it when I get back, like when I've done it.
Oh, okay. And he was like, no,
why? And I was like, well, because if I went to something like that,
and it's not been done yet.
Yeah, I personally would go, I'd love to donate 10 grand to this cause.
Yeah.
But you haven't done it yet. So it's kind of like, I'm not going to risk you getting out there and rolling your ankle on the first day. And, you know, like, I'm happy to support the charity anyway type thing. But yeah, it'd be far better to support you in victory.
In victory.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and then it's a real celebration and a shindig. And you can have a drink.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. So I think that might be an idea. You know, I'm just freeballing with you here.
If you'd like to auction off a snowboard lesson, you're more than welcome.
I'd love to. That'd be great. Thank you. I'd take the snowboarding lesson. That'd be super.
There you go. 10 grand for that. Boom. We've already raised some more money.
There does feel like added pressure because, you know, we've chosen to do this in a very public way in the hope of raising as much money as possible, right? So we're doing it with Global Heart are our partners. You know, we're going to be appearing on lots of their radio shows and kind of calling on the public in a very open way to support and donate. So yeah, of course, you know, this one feels like if you keel over in the Marathon du Sable and pull it a couple of days early, you kind of don't have to tell anyone.
Yeah. Whereas, okay, like, there's going to be a lot of people that know about this.
Whereas, yeah, this one is a more public.
Right, so the main aim of the game is not to keel over.
We won't be keeling over.
We must complete 30. Yep. The question is, how much money would you like to raise?
Global's target and my target are different. Okay. Because I'm just...
Is yours astronomical?
Well, no, like, okay, look, I would like to raise £1 million.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And it's a lot of money. But that's why...
We can up the price of that snowboard lesson. That's going to be 50 grand, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, just so you're clear, you don't get any of this money, you know, it all goes to charity.
I'm very happy with that.
Global think £500,000 is a good target. I would like to raise £1 million. I would be delighted with £500,000, like delighted. Yeah. You know, I purposefully set myself something that I think a lot of people feel is impossible. Mm-hmm. And so if we achieve the impossible, I'd like a nice donation, you know? I think.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think we can... I think, you know, like even if you gave, you know, £1 per marathon completed, it's a £30 donation, which by all accounts is a very generous donation. But, you know, there's 60 million people in the country. Not that we're going to reach all of them, obviously, but it would be great if people could just be as generous as possible.
Because it will soon rack up, won't it?
It's for children and they, you know, completely deserve the funds. The charities in many cases would struggle to support themselves without the funds, and that would be a great shame. You know, we need to keep these incredible causes and charities going. There's a reason we try to make it as difficult as possible, and that's so that people can get behind it in a meaningful way.
At Marathon 30, will your boy be there at the finish line?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, so yeah, you've got all the reasons.
Yeah, yeah. So I think all being well, Vogue and hopefully Gigi and Theodore,
the full ensemble,
will be there. Yeah.
How about the doggos? I don't think the doggos
are coming. No. Well, I don't know. I'll leave it to Vogue. But also, there's a way that you can all get involved as well if you fancy it. So Vogue is going to be leading the charge on a 5K a day for 30 days.
No way.
Here in London. So she's going to be running 5 kilometers every day that I'm running a marathon.
That's incredible. What a lovely idea.
And yeah, we're trying to encourage anyone, even if it's, you know, walking a lap of your local park every day that we're away. So 30 days of activity, you know, if you're not going to donate, but, you know, you want to use this as an opportunity for yourself, you know, to get fitter, then, you know, try working out every day for 30 days whilst I'm away.
Move and sweat with us.
Yeah.
So like a global movement.
Hopefully.
Does that have a little name with Vogue?
I'm not sure. It's early stages of development.
Early stages.
5K a day.
I think she's going to build up the Vogue's army.
I think so, yeah.
In Battersea Park?
But that's good for her because she'll, I don't mean to say she'll struggle to do that, but that's that's quite significant for her to run 5K
that's
every day.
That's quite a lot on the body.
It's great because she will push herself to do that. And I think if people can get on board and you know, share links, and I really want this to be like an almost interactive thing. Like, let's all collectively do what we can for Make Some Noise through this event, whether it be you getting fitter or donating, and we'll, you know, make a difference together.
That's unreal, Spencer. I absolutely love it. Last
Thanks,
question
brother.
On this podcast. What's your relationship like with Monday?
With Monday?
We like to ask all our guests on the Monday Mile how they feel about a Monday morning.
I'm not just saying this to be like annoyingly positive. I love Mondays. Yeah. I used to hate Mondays, right? So like, I used to live for the weekends, and Monday morning at my desk at ICAP used to just be this dark, gloomy, slow day because I didn't love what I did and whatever. But Monday morning now is, it's a fresh week, it's a fresh take. I really love it. It's where I'm really happy on a Monday. Like, it's, I don't know, it's annoying to kind of sound like you're just in such a good place, right? But I just love my family, love my wife and kids. We just have beautiful weekends together. By the time Monday comes around, you've got all these ideas teaming up that's been cooking over the weekend. And I always just hit the ground running, excuse the pun, on Mondays. And yeah, it doesn't mean to say I don't look forward to the weekend like everybody else, but no, I love a Monday.
Ready to charge. Spencer Matthews, thank you so much for joining us here on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. It has been so enlightening and inspiring to have your presence and infectious energy on this. We've done a 3-mile walk.
Fantastic.
There you go. How's that for a bit of active recovery? Monday Mile listeners, you know what to do. Please do make sure to subscribe. Hit the like button. We are on YouTube now, and we do drop at 12 a.m. every single Monday morning for those early risers. Monday Mile listeners, it's a wrap.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Spencer.
Cheers, mate.
That was amazing. We'll be right back.